Aviation Quest is C101, wind 270 degrees, 10 knots, runway 27 left, cleared for takeoff.
Aviation Quest CC101, cleared for takeoff, 27 left. V1, rotate. Positive climb.
Aviation Quest CC. Stories from above. The views shared in this podcast are personal and for informational purposes only. They do not reflect any employer or aviation authority, and nothing discussed here should be considered flight training or regulatory guidance. Please always refer to official sources. This episode may also contain product placements. For further information, visit our website aviation-quest.ca.
Jürgen Reis welcomes you for Aviation Quest CC episode number 20. Well, happy birthday, Aviation Quest CC. And there is certainly in the podcast cockpit also today my professional pilot friend Stefan. Hello on the other side.
Hey Jürgen, nice to speak to you again. Everything okay?
Yeah, the running joke. Last time we had here really, really winter bad weather. You on the other side already was almost in summertime, and now it seems to there is some flip around. Yeah, it's pretty nice. It's almost spring here in middle, even though it's just the middle of February. But there was just a big cousin of your A320, an A380. I think just took off from Zurich, heading eastwards, and it's nice. You know, even for VFR flying, it would be a pretty nice day. And on your side, you said today, we hope we make it through the storm.
Yes, we have a major storm system over the island, and it started yesterday afternoon. It has already caused a lot of disruption with flights, cancellations. We had power cuts, no internet. So let's see if we can get through this podcast.
We are live on tape, but if there will be a cut in this episode, so if you hear something, there was something, they managed here something, yes, this was our diversion through, we make it somehow through the storm. We have our strategies if the storm is really getting worse. But well, before we get started, certainly we never forget about your YouTube channel. I think today is no storm flight. We have so your YouTube channel is certainly FS Clips, but also our Aviation-Quest podcast YouTube channel is managed and filmed by you. Yeah, we are an audio cast, but also at YouTube, and there is a great video of a flight also today. As I said, created by you. From where to where, Stefan?
Yeah, today we're doing an extremely beautiful flight. So we're going to join Edelweiss from Switzerland. So we take off in Zurich and we're flying to Norway into the fjords. And we land in an airport called Bergen. And the approach is very, very beautiful. I was very lucky because I always fly with real world weather. It was a nice day, not cloudy. And the whole approach was just very, very pretty.
Awesome. And yeah, I have to correct something. So we are in the second part of our flight adventure series. So episode 19 was the first, and this is all in all now the fourth part of our flight sim special. And in the last episode, there was a joke of mine, which was quite spontaneous because I had no clue. Also today, Stefan, you will confirm, we have no clue of what we are presenting the listeners. So we have a clue, but this is not coordinated or something. And, last time you brought up the shuttle and I went through my memory. So I went back memory lane and there was a magazine, I think it was from the 90s. And we have a comment section in our YouTube channel. And I would be really happy to have some credits here. Who wrote this? Is this story? Because it's not an essay. There is no publication. I did my research here. So first of all, I messed up the joke because I was talking about a piano that was dropped up out of a space shuttle or something along the lines like this. And it hit the ground. What was this? It hit the ground and
shuttle, right?
Or the other way around. Yeah, the shuttle
is worse than the piano, I guess, is the story.
This is a joke. So I told it certainly the other way around. I told that the piano hit the ground before the shuttle, and it was certainly the other way around. And there seemed to be really, Stefan, I've sent you the text, there seems some physics behind it, because the shuttle doesn't fall. It performs a controlled entry, and in this, it's just a physical thought experiment. But a dropped object could actually reach the ground sooner, so the shuttle could, would land, and then the piano will hit the ground because it isn't managing heat and drag like the space shuttle does. So even so, I flipped the joke around, but I am looking forward for the comment section. It's really interesting. Physics is real. And it was a grand piano. And I remember they wrote something about if it is dropped, so to say, from the cargo bay, from the space shuttle, I think it's 30,000 feet or something like this. Please don't nail me down on this. Just comment in the comment section. I'd be really interesting. Maybe somebody remember the article, which magazine it was, and what the real story was all about. And if it was really, I don't know, I'm interested in background. I didn't find any international source. There is no such thing like a publication, a serious publication behind this.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to see if anybody knows more about it. It seems to make sense. If you have an object falling, it's just falling. It has to overcome air resistance while the shuttle is somewhat...
And I mean, this was a grand piano. It was a concert piano. I think a concert... This is also why they chose the concert piano, because certainly this is more... Yeah, it's not a parachute, but still it floats something... Yeah, it falls maybe better than a stone. Oh, man. This is back to my physics. This is what I already pointed out in the very first, in the premiere episode. Physics were never my strength.
Anyway, we cleared it up. So, yeah, the story is a piano will not be able to catch up with the space shuttle if they both come in at the same time. I guess that's what it was all about. I don't know. It'd be interesting. Maybe somebody has heard about this. I have never heard about it, but I find it an interesting comparison.
And there was certainly a serious publication. It was this 90s Flight Sim magazine. No, I want to know about, and write me in the comment section. And well, already 7 minutes in. Should we start the podcast now?
Yes, maybe we should. We should, yes.
Okay, so I am looking forward. Are you ready for your fourth adventure?
Yeah, sure. Shall I start or do you want to start?
Let's make the same order like last time. You got the first, so to say, the first fly or the first fall, whatever, maybe another space shuttle.
Yes. So when we put together a list of things that stood out for us in flight simming, things that we remember, there were, of course, some flights, but for me, there were also some aircraft. So I have like 3-4 aircraft that I really want to mention. And so today I'm going to start with the Level D-767. Which was an aircraft I flew for a very, very long time. I must have logged, I don't know, maybe 1,000 hours in that thing. I flew it everywhere, short haul, long haul. And I mean, this was at the time when the 767 was still very active in the real world. I remember BA had them. At that time, Lauda Air had them. Lots of airlines would use them across the Atlantic, like American Airlines would use them to Heathrow and all that stuff. So they were very common aircraft. And when I flew it, I always flew real world routes. And what made it so cool was that the 767 was used for both short haul and long haul. So BA would fly it from Heathrow to Athens or to Stockholm one day, and the next day they would fly to Boston or JFK. And according to them, they could make money with that aircraft on both routes, which meant it was super flexible, really cool aircraft. And when the Level D767 came out, to me, it really set a new standard of simulating. And I don't know if you remember, in the olden days, we all had 2D cockpits, and 3D cockpits was something very new. And you needed a really good computer to actually sit in the 3D cockpit. And quite often the quality of the 3D cockpit wasn't as good as the 2D. And this was the first aircraft I remember where I would do an entire flight in the 3D cockpit, because it was, the quality was there. It was really good. The performance was good enough. And it made a huge difference, because before you just had a 2D representation of the cockpit, like a picture. But now all of a sudden you could move your head and look around the cockpit. And at that time, that was something really new and unusual. And yeah, I loved the 767 was amazing. I flew it a lot. And yeah, I to be honest, I don't know what happened to Level D, because it was a really successful product. It everybody liked it. Everybody thought it was amazing. We all expected them to bring out a 757, which would have made sense. But it's the only aircraft they ever made. And then they disappeared. So I'm not quite sure what happened to them. Maybe somebody knows. Anyway, this was the only aircraft, and it was amazing. So, yeah.
I was also back then always a little bit below your standards with the PC. I flew it as well. I enjoyed it as well. I studied like crazy. And I flew it in a 2D cockpit. And it was the time. Didn't we even exchange screenshots? I'm not quite sure. But I remember so many great sunset flights in the Level D Boeing 767. I don't know of how many flights we cover in these three episodes of our flight adventures, but there was, especially in Florida, I flew this thing around like crazy, and it was so much fun and so realistic and also smooth and well performing. It was really also an aircraft that was fun to fly, and I think isn't it still in service? I just have seen, I don't know how new this YouTube video was, but I've just seen a YouTube video about it, and it's, I think it's still, isn't it, I think American Airlines still flies it, I don't know.
Yeah. I still see them. But there's I see a lot of cargo versions, like UPS has quite a few in Europe. I've seen one or two FedEx ones. Passenger-wise, to be honest, I only ever see them when I go to Heathrow or Gatwick or something.
I think there are a few of them still in the air. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they're crossing the Atlantic still, mostly by U.S. airlines. I think in Europe, there may be one or two charter airlines that still have them. I think Condor still has some. Although they were saying they were retiring them and replacing them with 330s. But in Europe, it's a very, very rare aircraft now these days. In the US, they're a bit more common, and sometimes they bring them over the Atlantic. But here, to be honest, I can't think of a major airline that still uses them. They've all gone. I know Air Canada still uses them as well. So, yeah. But, I mean, they're still around, yeah.
As I said, it was a dream airliner in the FSX. I think you also used it in the FSX or flew it in the FSX?
Yeah, both. I think it came out for FS 2004, and then they brought it out for FSX. And, yeah. So I started off in FS 2004. And then they brought it out for, they updated it. I can't remember whether we had to pay for the update or not. It's such a long time ago. In any case, I mostly spent time with it in FSX because, as you know, FSX then was the last Microsoft Flight Simulator, really. And after that, we just were stuck with that platform for a very long time. Yeah.
My takeaway is, if you get your hands on a sophisticated, maybe study level 767 in an hour day simulator, give it a try. It's as I said, it's really an awesome airplane to fly.
Yes. I mean, there is a this year, probably towards the end of 2026, we will get a very good study level 757 for Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Oh, wow. They are quite similar, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. Almost identical cockpit. So they've shown us some screenshots and some videos, and it looks absolutely amazing. It's still a while, you know, we're still looking at, I don't know, 11, maybe even 10, 11 months, let's call it. The company is called Bluebird, if you want to look them up. They will be selling their product through different channels, like Just Flight, and all of them are going to sell the product. And I'm really looking forward to it. The 75 is a really beautiful aircraft, and very similar to the 76.
Mm-hmm. Okay, should I start with my flight number 4, Stefan?
Yes, please.
As I promised already in the last episode as a spoiler, so one flight today brings me back to my early beginnings and one to my actual, now I enjoy my evening, or if I have time in the evening, I do something like this flights. It's from Samedan. My takeoff plane or my go-to plane is the F-18 in Aerofly FS, and I mess around the Alps. It's so much fun. I mean, there is the Bernina Alps, there is Engadin, there is Eiger Matterhorn, not so far away. So, I mean, with 25 minutes, you get all around this amazing, not all of them, but you get really, really impressive insights or sightseeing flights over the Swiss Alps. And you can return, or I usually land back in Samedan, or also Merlis Airport is a possibility. It's LSZM, that's the ICAO code. But yeah, it's just a pleasure. I think also I've seen in one of your FS clips videos, you also had some fun with the F-18 in Aerofly FS, hadn't you?
Yes. It's a really cool aircraft, the F-18. By the way, that reminds me, in the last episode, we were...
Oh, your homework.
Yes.
Is there a Grand Canyon?
Yes, it is there, and it's really well done.
Wow.
Really cool place to fly. So, talking about F-18, you could fly the F-18 through the Grand Canyon in Aerofly FS4. It's really well modeled. And it's a lot of fun.
Sounds like a little bit Iron Eagle Part 2, huh?
Sounds like a challenge.
I remember this film. A little bit careful down there. Maybe start with the Cessna, but with the F-18 in the Grand Canyon, okay. You put something on my flight sim bucket list here.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, do you find the F-18 hard to land, difficult to land?
Not at all, because there is an aiming point simulation, and all you have to do is to put this aiming point on the runway, and it's, I don't know, it's a pleasure to fly, it's a pleasure to land. I doubt that this is that easy in reality. I heard other things about the F-18. No, I think it's really, I mean... Yeah, it's fun. I enjoy it to land. As I said, this aiming point simulation in Aerofly, at least it's in my version of Aerofly FS, there is a little circle, a green circle, and all you have to do is put this circle to the beginning of the runway, and then you fly towards the runway. It's normally easy going, and also the flaps are quite effective. There is even there's an air brake. So it's really no, once you got the settings a little bit, you know, I know always between 40 and 50%, and then I go down and it's no. I mean, certainly on a super short runway, it's a challenge, but on a normal runway, and Yeah, I mean, what you have to keep in mind in Samedan, before I forget to say, the runway is 1,800 meters long, but the elevation is 5,900 feet. So this is, it's okay. It's 5,600 feet above main sea level. So this is quite, thin air up there.
Yeah, it is. I mean, an F-18 is probably not struggling, but if you fly something else, you might want to think about performance, especially if it's a warm day. You might struggle a bit getting
air.
Yeah,
with a little air, with a GA, be careful there.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's your take on the F-18 in Aerofly FS? You fly a new version of Aerofly FS? Do you find it's hard to land?
No, I do exactly what you do. I use the flight path vector, which you said is this circle, that little aeroplane, the green one, and wherever you put it, that's where the aircraft flies. By the way, we even have one on the Airbus. We have a flight path vector there as well, which we can use, and it's super useful. We call it the bird. I'm not sure why we call it the bird. It doesn't look like a bird, but anyway, and these things are super useful because they show you exactly where the aircraft is going. And with
the way,
on the F-18.
To Stefan's terminology, what did I just say? Aiming point indicator? This is glider language, by the way, folks.
yes. Anyway, with the hub, it's super nice because if you do a low-level flight just above the trees and you see a hill coming up, all you have to do is put the little bird just above the hill and you know you're going to be fine. You're just going to go just above the hill. So it's a really nice, useful tool. And like you, I use it for landing a lot. I put it just before the touchdown zone and then fly down, and then you do a little flare, and then you land just in the touchdown zone. So, yeah, I really like the F-18. I have it. It's part of Microsoft Flight Simulator as well, and it's a really nice aircraft.
Yeah, my final summary about Samedan is it's just an ultimate alpine sandbox. It's a brilliant scenery, and it's endless fun messing around. It's really... Yeah, it sometimes really it's the so to say the final sim highlight of my day whenever I have time.
yes. Yeah, I mean I use Aerofly FS4 mostly in VR. And when you fly in virtual reality, of course the best thing to do is to take a fast jet and do low level flight, you know, at like 200-300 feet at 300 knots or something. That's so much fun. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I usually do it in the Alps because then you get a sense of speed when you're flying in the mountains. Yeah.
Sure. And you do something you wouldn't do in your normal, you know, you have some, you need some variation sometimes. I can imagine. I mean, your FS Clips channel is focusing on A320. I think also you need sometimes some new mental challenges or at least some variation.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we said, the nice thing about simulators is that you can do things that you could never do in the real world, and that's what makes it so much fun.
Okay. And what about your fifth flight adventure? Is it, appropriate for the real world, or all I can say, spoiler alert, mine isn't.
No, actually, I thought I'm going to talk about something I'd actually really forgotten. So when Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020 came out, there was someone who created an app that allowed two people to fly the same aircraft at the same time, and you would share the screen. You didn't have to be physically in the same room. So if somebody would switch a flick, you could see it happening on your screen. So a shared cockpit app. And a friend of mine, who's also from Austria, by the way, he was struggling with an aircraft. I think it was the PMDG 777. And he asked me if I could explain it to him. And I said, yeah, but, you know, this is really complicated. And said, no, there is this app. and we just fly together. I had never heard of it. I think it was just called Shared Cockpit or something. So I downloaded the app. He explained it to me. And then all of a sudden, he was in Austria. I was in Spain. We were sitting in the same cockpit. And I could literally show him which button to flick, how to dial things in. We programmed the FMS together. And then we flew together. And he did the landing. And I talked him down on the ILS. And that was a really cool experience. I've never, ever done anything like that before. And I thought it was a really cool training tool. I'm an Airbus pilot. I could just tell him what I know about the 777. It's not an aircraft I know that well. But obviously, he has nothing to do with aviation. So for him, everything was new. But, you know, he managed to land it and it was all fine. And I think he had a much better understanding afterwards, after the landing. And he was very happy about it. And I thought, you know what, this is a really cool training tool. If you want to fly with someone who's actually knowledgeable about an aircraft, instead of them writing you pages and pages of explanation, you hop into the cockpit, you do a flight together, and they can explain everything to you whilst you're flying. And then maybe you do some hand flying and they give you some tips. And I thought that was really cool, really, really cool. And I'm actually surprised that we don't see more of that being used, even on YouTube videos and stuff. I thought when I flew with this guy, I thought, wow, this is revolutionary. Maybe this is going to be really big, you know, but actually I haven't seen much of it. It's still around. The app exists. People use it. But for some reason, the uptake was not as big as I thought it would be. But anyway, that was a really cool experience because it's just funny, you know, when you sit in front of your simulator and the aircraft takes off and you, because some guy in another country is pulling on his joystick and he then says, okay, gear up, and you put the gear up and you just fly the plane together. So that was really cool. I really enjoyed it. And unfortunately, the Phoenix A320 doesn't work with that software, which is really sad, because that would be cool if I could fly the A320 with someone else. But anyway, this is my next adventure.
Sounds like sim flight instructing. What's the name of the app one more time?
I think it was just called Shared Cockpit. I need to look it up. I don't have it anymore. I just installed it for that one flight. Okay. And I know there's more than one app available that can do this. There's not just one. So I'm gonna look it up again and see if I can find it. And then maybe in the next episode, I can even put a link maybe in the description of the video if people are interested.
Yeah. As I said, or maybe in the YouTube, in the YouTube section. I think the YouTube comment section is a great place to share knowledge a little bit. I think it's a good place to exchange. And ready for my fifth adventure here, Stefan?
Yes, go ahead.
Actually, it brings us back to the years when we were in middle school and already friends. Maybe this was the very, very first flight sim adventure you ever observed. Taking off from a carrier, flying under the Golden Gate Bridge, a little bit enjoying so low-level flying over San Francisco and certainly the Oakland Hills, and somehow messing around some aerobatics and back to the carrier. Could it have been something like this, Stefan?
Yes, I remember that day.
And certainly Alcatraz, the high security prison that became in the 1970s a tourist attraction, is also if you fly under the Golden Gate Bridge. I say it one more time. So, by the way, what's your take on air law in flight simulation?
Yeah, luckily it doesn't apply, you know. I mean, I would always say if you fly online, like one of those, like WhatsApp. Then obviously I would say be disciplined, be polite, you know, stick to the rules. There are people that just want to simulate real world operations. So don't, you know. But if you're on your own, but you can even fly online without being on WhatsApp, just with friends. You can open private rooms. And I've seen people, you know, doing really funny stuff together. Then, of course, the world is your oyster. You know, you can do whatever you want.
I think flying under a bridge, which is certainly a double no-go in real world, I think all over the world. In the sim, maybe one of the first things most people will try out.
Yes, exactly. I mean, my favorite thing to do at the beginning was to fly to London and then to go to Tower Bridge and fly, because Tower Bridge has two connections at the top and the bottom, and to fly in between those two. But you can only do it with a small aircraft. A big aircraft doesn't fit. Yeah. Golden Gate is a bit bigger, so you can actually
you
get something.
220 feet, if my research is correct. Please correct me in the comment section, if not, at high tide, Stefan. So with the A320, you should be quite precise, huh? Could be.
Yes. Yeah, you have to be. You have to be. Yeah. No, I remember that day. That was a lot of fun. I mean, we talked about it. It was the first time I saw a proper flight simulator. And, you know, we used it to just do nonsense. Of course we did.
Yeah. And certainly, I mean, if you land now with an F-18 or an F-14, a little bit Top Gun spirit, a typical carrier deck is about 1,090 feet, I got here. So this is 333 meters. But the landing area, because of the arrestor virus, is certainly much shorter. So this is really, I think you did some carrier landings in DCS, didn't you?
Yeah, I did carry landings in DCS. Very difficult, but it takes a lot of practice. But once you do it, it's a lot of fun. I remember you did all of them back then with the F-18 Interceptor. I don't think I ever managed to do a carry landing back then.
I did so many because, don't know, there must have been a reason that I, don't know, was not at my best in school, to say it in to say it mildly. No, it was really, I don't know. I was quite addicted to those flight sim games. But certainly, other afterwards my school luckily got back into charge, but it was in middle school really. I did so many carrier landings. As I said, there must have been a reason.
but it's quite a
challenging task. And I think nowadays there are a couple of simulators that allow this. We had DCS, there's X-Plane, I think also Microsoft Flight Simulator 2024. And even if you have to fly a few miles up or down to San Francisco to replicate my adventure, I just say, it's worth the travel. And with a jet, it's often just a couple of minutes with don't know how many Mach.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's still a cool thing to do, even after all these years. Yeah. But like you said, Amiga 500, right? It was F-8 Interceptor.
The one and only Interceptor.
Was a lot of fun. Wasn't this the sim where one of the missions was to protect Air Force One, and we screwed that up completely? Do you remember that?
Those missions were quite tricky. There were also some bandits out there. Yeah, they were attacking Air Force One, and you have to protect it. And it was really wherever they came from, I don't know. But San Francisco was quite a dangerous place to be there. But also, sometimes because of me.
Yes, I do have a memory of us crashing into Air Force One by mistake. because we
really?
Got. I'm pretty sure we did something like that because we were wondering what kind of aircraft it was, and we wanted.
I was just thinking: are there any harder or any more violent air laws to break? You know, fly under the Golden Gate Bridge, crash into Air Force One. I think we can't get much higher in the scale here.
Yeah. I like I said, my first day flight simming in my life was filled with nonsense, but in a way it made it all the more interesting and more fun.
By the way, if there are people out there listening who are really flying those jets and want to say, hey, Jürgen, hey, Stefan, I want to have a word with you on flying, you know, how flying an F-18 in real world is and what it means, please come as a guest. And certainly also, if there is somebody who is FAA or ALO people, please, we are open for every conversation and, you know, bring it back to the, so to say, to the solid. But yeah, as I said, this is a flight simulation, have fun conversation, but certainly guests from all corners of aviation, we are looking forward to talk to you. And just write us on our email address, which is aviation@aviation-quest.cc. My LinkedIn account is also, I think, an easy way to reach out for me. My name there is Jürgen Reiss, like me. And yeah, as I said, it's also the YouTube comment section, certainly. Stefan, what do you think? Should we risk a third adventure today or?
I can do a very quick one if you want.
Same with me. We make two very quick ones, and
yes,
then we have again three. This would be great.
Okay, so I spent some time in New Zealand, as you know, and I spent some time in a city called Queenstown, which is in the middle of a valley in a lake. And Queenstown has an airport, very small airport, very short runway. And if the wind comes from the lake, the aircraft have to fly in through the valley. It's a really difficult approach, similar to Innsbruck, very steep. And I had never heard of this approach before until I was in New Zealand because, you know, it wasn't really on my radar. And there was a lookout. You could drive with the car up a mountain, and there was a lookout, and the planes would fly underneath you. So you could
Wow.
see, Air New Zealand, Airbus A320. With the gear down and everything, and you could see it from above, and it would fly straight past you, really close.
Wow.
And that was really, really cool. So obviously, when I got back, I tried to replicate this in Microsoft Flight Simulator, and I'm super happy to say that in MSFS 2020 and 24, Microsoft has included a really highly detailed scenery of Queenstown, including all the airport. So it's an amazing approach. It's really cool. And when you fly down, it's a really steep approach. So you have to put the gear down on everything. Otherwise, the speed will run away from you. If you look to the right, you will see a mountain with a lookout. And that's where I was standing, watching the aircraft go by. So that's worth an adventure if you want to see something different.
Great. So what's the airport one more time?
It's Queenstown. It's on the South Island.
Got it. Yeah, my sixth flight is pretty short as well. Literally pretty short because only about 10 to 12 nautical miles, depending of how you fly it. But we stay in San Francisco. It's in the San Francisco Bay, and I call it the San Francisco Bay Shuttle. It's from San Francisco to Oakland and the other way around. And I think, many early day flight sim enthusiasts will remember this. It's a really, really great training flight you can do with all kinds of aircraft because the runway are long enough. Certainly, San Francisco as well as Oakland are international airports, so KSFO and KOAK are the ICAO codes. And it's really great because this keeps you super busy. You can even fly ILS, you know, but it's just you take off and you're already in the approach preparation. It's super fun, and it's with a couple of minutes, you get a lot of training in there, and it's still different from a normal traffic pattern flying. And it's, as I said, I had so much fun there with the Learjet or with certainly GA aircraft of all types. And it's, for me, still an amazing training route that exists since the really first, I think, I got addicted to it with my first 20, what was this? 8286 BC with a more advanced, so to say, graphics card and with the flight simulator. And it was, I think Microsoft Flight Simulator 4.0 was it. There was already, this was the go-to. And still, there is something magic between these two cities. You can have so much fun in a little distance, and it's just a great, as I said, if you want to have some landings in or take off land, just take the shuttle back and forth a little time sometimes, and you get really sufficient when it comes to, or proficient when it comes to take off and landing a plane.
That sounds cool. And the flight time is what did you say? 10, 15 minutes or what?
No, between 10 and 12 nautical miles. So the flight time depends. But certainly if you use the Learjet, I mean, you can take a timer. Maybe you can make it in 7 minutes or something. This would be fun. Wow. Please write in the YouTube section your record time. Take a Learjet, fly from Oakland to San Francisco or the other way around. I want to see I'm sure that it's possible below 10 minutes. But here we are again. Stefan will not agree to this kind of approach. we are again in the fun part of the air law section.
But you know, there was a flight, it's not operated anymore, which was the shortest flight in the world with a jet aircraft. It was an Embraer. And that aircraft flew for only 7 minutes. Do you remember that? It was from St. Gallen to Friedrichshafen. So they took off in St. Gallen, crossed the Lake Constance, and then landed in Friedrichshafen. And that was a scheduled service. I don't know how long it ran for, but it was in the Guinness Book World of Record. And I often thought, how would you do this? Because you literally have to do everything on the ground, including all the preparation for landing, the landing briefing. The gear stays up probably for 2 minutes or whatever. I don't know. So, flights like that, I mean, they're not very common, but they seem to exist. And I wonder sometimes how they operate them, because this is not a normal operation, you know?
I guess these are relocation flights, aren't they? You know that you have to go.
No, it was a normal service. They would fly from St. Gallen, so Altenrhein, to Friedrichshafen, and then from there they carried on to Frankfurt. So I guess the people that got on in St. Gallen wanted to go to Frankfurt, but they had a stop in between in Friedrichshafen. And that hop across Lake Constance was the shortest passenger flight by a jet in the world whilst it was operating. So pretty amazing.
I can see both of the airports, certainly not from here, but I can see Lake of Constance here from you visited my apartment here in the 8th story, in this 10-story building. And it's so to say the Lake Constance version of my San Francisco Bay Shuttle.
Why not? Do you think there'll be flights between San Francisco and Auckland? I really have to research this, if there's ever been a flight. That would be really interesting.
Relocation flights, I'm pretty sure. I've heard about this somewhere. I don't know.
Okay.
Relocation flights of jets. But now there is a lot of homework to do in our YouTube section. I want to read answers to every question we brought up in this podcast. So listeners, please hit the keyboard, hit the YouTube section. Don't forget about subscribe and the like and whatever else you want to do. I'm looking forward for some answers here.
Absolutely.
From Lake Constance to the West Coast. Wow, we keep you busy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good stuff. That's a flight I didn't know about. I'm glad you mentioned it. I'm going to have a look at that. Maybe that's a great way to do landing training, you know, with some new aircraft.
Well, some homework for you. Looking forward to hearing from your experience in the next episode. Stefan, exactly. Sounds like a plan?
Sounds like a plan, yes.
Yeah, well, I think it was XL, so a longer version than usual, but without any storm interruption. But I think we should not... We should not play anymore with this bad weather on your side. I think we should be happy to have this podcast live on tape. And I am looking forward, as I said, we have a third part of our Flight Sim Adventure series in podcast 21. And yep, please comment. A lot of answers are waiting for you, or a lot of questions. Please listen to this episode one more time. Hit the keyboard, and we are looking forward to hearing and reading from you in the comment section.
Exactly, yes. So as always, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. And we look forward to seeing you in the next one.
Thank you for listening to Aviation Quest CC. Stories from above. For more information about these episodes and everything we do, visit our homepage aviation-quest.cc. We appreciate your time and support, and we'd love to have you back for the next episode. Until then, stay safe, stay curious, and keep your passion for aviation flying high.